mansion and hating each other. Hey, welcome back to Success Made to Last. This is our country series, and we talk with country western singers and songwriters. And on today's show is Lacey J. Dalton, legendary songwriter. She has had hits like Black Coffee and Hard Times. Today we're talking about Wild Horses, music, America coming back to life, and a little bit about Bonanza. Lacey J. Dalton, welcome to our show.
Dum da da dum da da dum da da dum da 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 da. You know, I was telling you earlier, I live on Cartwright Road.
Woo-hoo!
Up here in the what we call the Virginia Highlands, which is Reno, Nevada, sits in a deep valley, a long, deep valley called the Truckee Meadows. And on the western side are the Sierra Nevada Mountains. On the eastern side is a smaller range of mountains called the Virginia Range. And I live up in that beautiful mountain range with what is arguably the largest herd of wild horses that's not on an Indian reservation in the United States.
Oh my God.
And that's why I moved up here. Those horses were really, I was playing all the casinos down in Reno, and I made a lot of friends with the crews, and I worked at Harris for years and years and years, and then I worked at the Nugget constantly out here. And I learned that just outside of town, and it is called the biggest little city in the world, you can get out of town and be up at Lake Tahoe in 45 minutes. You can be up at Virginia City, right, near the old town of Virginia City, is where I live. About 8 minutes up the road is Virginia City. And I always loved it up there and had a wonderful friend there. And we were having tea one night, Rick, just at sunset. She had all these candles lit. She was a wonderful person. She was a very, very gifted psychic. And I loved to visit her. And we were sitting in her living room. We heard this sound outside. And I will never forget. I said, Elaine, what am I hearing? And she put her finger up in the air and said, listen, there's a horse coming. So here we were on E Street in the old town of Virginia City, and a small herd of wild horses was walking up the street. And I knew right at that minute that if those horses could walk up the street wild and free in Virginia City, it probably was a place I'd like to live. And that's why eventually, it took me years to find the right house up here, to find the right place. I needed it to be far enough away from people. Because I thought, I was married at the time, and I thought, and when we retired, I wanted to do dog rescue. So I needed to be far enough away from my neighbors so that the dogs barking, you know, the rescued dogs, wouldn't bother them. And I also had horses, and I just didn't want any of that to get in the way with my neighbors. So it took me a while to find this house, but I've been here now 22 years.
Lacey J., have you seen an old antique map like they used at the beginning of Bonanza that they always set on fire?
You know, we had a copy of that map. And I had what is called the Wild Horse Museum and Gift Store. We had it for 8 years up in Virginia City to educate people about the wild horses and also to try to, the advocacies up here, there were a lot of little horse advocates, and they were all proprietary and they didn't get along with one another and couldn't work together. And I thought that if we did a cooperative project where they could, they could have a little stuffed horse that they bought for a dollar, and if they let, they said we want to make two more dollars on this horse or three, we would take that little horse and we'd add on maybe a dollar in the cooperative store to pay the salary of the person who did all the, you know, kept the thing running and was in the store and did all the inventory and the books and took care of the taxes and everything. They didn't have to do another thing. They didn't have to do their little bake sales and their, you know, rallies and all this stuff to make money, because people working hands-on with wild horses, the people really doing that work who are boots on the ground, they don't have a lot of time. I mean, it's very, very demanding work, particularly if you're dealing with injured or disabled horses or horses that have been abused. And a lot of wild horses have been traumatized beyond belief and injured in the roundups. And a lot of them are simply because they're wild horses and they're gathered sometimes by Indian tribes, sometimes by other people. There are a lot of foals that come in injured. And we work pretty closely with one of the groups that whose specialty it is to bring these little babies back to life. and they're called Chili Pepper, Miracle Mustang, and it's chilipepper.org, and it's spelled chili like cold, C-H-I-L-L-Y. But I advertise her a lot because she's really an amazing advocate, just amazing. She has a leg. One of her legs has more metal in it. She's had 47 operations on the leg and still gets around. So they're expecting a catastrophic collapse of this leg. And for years, she has been taking care of these injured, orphaned baby wild horses and bringing them back and getting them down the road. There was a huge collapse of a wild horse sanctuary in South Dakota a couple of years ago. And she went out with her husband in the just freezing, like 40 below in snow and blizzard conditions. And the fence, you couldn't even see where the fences were on this place. And the horses were all in really bad shape. Really, many of them died. But it was in one of those very, very cold cracks. They went out there and they gathered. They were able to separate and get loaded about 800 of those horses and a lot of them lived. It's amazing. ChiliPepper.org is in my foundation, which is Let 'Em Run Foundation. What we do really is we raise money and we give it to the smaller mom and pop groups, and we let the big groups take care of themselves because they can. But the people who really do a lot of this wild horse rescue and rehabilitation are mom and pop groups. They don't have the support of big organizations. I mean, they might get grants from them from time to time. But they are doing every day, you know, day in, day out, year in, year out work that a lot of the big groups don't even have anyone who can do that kind of work for them.
Amazing. Well, let me go deep and philosophical on you, because the wild horses is this great metaphor that we study here at Success Made to Last. I've read about your biography, followed your music for a long time, but when you compare yourself to a wild horse, what are the similarities between a wild horse and Lacey J. Dalton?
Well, you know, a wild horse, it does not have a pedigree. It does not have bloodlines that allow it to be sold to people or have a lot of support in going to owners who can have it trained and taken care of properly. And, you know, I came from very humble beginnings, and I didn't know anybody in the music business. So when I went to Nashville, I really didn't have the that you really need. Well, people ask me what to do when you get into the music business. You know, what's the first thing I should do? And I said, well, one of the first things you ought to do is go to Belmont College in Nashville or somewhere and learn how the music business works. Find out where the profit is, where you can come in. I think one of the best ways for people to learn that when they're just starting out now is stay home, make your singer-songwriter CD or your band CD with your own people in your own studio. Sell however many of those you can sell locally. Maybe you'll sell, 500 the first time. But it'll certainly pay for itself. And then, you know, usually a lot of younger people really are good on the internet. They really know how to, they like being on there. They like social media, which is a huge piece of how to get your songs to other people and let people know what you're doing. Do that until you're selling in the, thousands of pieces of product, because people don't necessarily buy CDs online, buy a song. But at your shows, they like to have those CDs because they like to have you sign them. They like your picture. They like the stories behind the songs. So there's still, even though record companies aren't big into it, I still do a lot of business that way, because people want something to carry. They want something to put in their purse and take home with them after a concert. Mm-hmm. And so I tell young people starting out, I wouldn't deal with the record companies until they want you, until you have proven to them and to yourself that you can actually. John Prine was the perfect example of this. John Prine, when he was performing, he was very different from everyone. He never, ever compromised the way he wanted to write. He never followed rules necessarily, and he was a fabulous performer and a fabulous person. And he would put a little piece of paper in the middle, a little cardboard folded piece of paper in the middle of the table where he was performing. And then on this little cardboard, he said, you know, put your information down, and when I have a new record, we'll send you a notice of it, and you can buy my new record. He had 100,000 signatures. He never needed a record company ever again, because those 100,000 people became many, many hundreds of thousands of people. And he was able to disseminate his music that way, and that was really before a lot of computer advantages happened. And I'm here to tell you that those of us who are techno peasants, which, you know, my son is like on the cutting edge of Google Glass. He's like this amazing programmer person. My daughter is very conversant in it. I, because my ex-husband was really good on the computer and my son was fabulous, my daughter was fabulous, I just never really got into the computers in the way that human beings should at this point in our lives. So I am at a tremendous disadvantage. I don't really enjoy being on a computer at all. I can only stand to be on one for about half an hour before my brain explodes. I'm on the telephone an inordinate amount of time, probably from 7 in the morning till about 2 in the afternoon almost every day. And that is how I do my business.
I think everyone has their own unique way of staying close to customers and listeners. And for John, his approach was just so smart, but yet commonsensical. He did have a great relationship with his fans.
He was, and he was like that, I think, as a person. I got to spend a whole day with him. He was very good friends with Fred Kohler, who was the man who actually taught me how to write songs. Fred was constantly wrote with people like Shel Silverstein, and he wrote with John Prine. He wrote "Let's Talk Dirty in Hawaiian" with John. Was one of the my favorite Fred Coleson. But you know, he wrote "She Came from Fort Worth, but Fort Worth Couldn't Hold Her," and a lot of things with Shel Silverstein that were hits. And I remember Fred Kohler and Shel Silverstein came to my house in California, and they stayed for 2 weeks, and Shel donned an Indian bedspread, which he then wore as a toga for the entire time that he was in the house. I don't know what they were on, maybe nothing. Everything everybody said became a song. Everything, you know, to "Let's Go to the Bathroom." "Oh, that's a great hook line." And they would write a song called "Let's Go to the Bathroom." You know, and it was like constant. By the time they left, I wanted to kill both of them. But no. I'd had a crash course from two of very, very strong songwriters. And Fred has written some books on songwriting and is really a very good teacher of it. And that paid off for me later on in my life. Just in 2015, I had many BMI awards for songs that I had written that got a million airplay. Things like "Whisper" and "Slow Down" and "Taking It Easy" and "Hillbilly Girl with the Blues" and "Everybody Makes Mistakes." And there were a lot of things that I had written that were, you know, had awards. And I was asked to teach songwriting at a level 4 prison up in Susanville, California. It's the High Desert State Prison. It was through the California Arts Council, through an arm that they have called the William James Association. And what a powerful experience that was. I worked up there for 3.5 years, 2 days a week. My guitar player and I would go up Monday morning, and we would teach on Monday and spend the night and then go in and teach on Tuesday and go home on Tuesday afternoon. And that was level 4. That's the 20 to life guys. And the difference that made in those people's lives, now some of them can even teach the other students. Each one teach one. It's the most heartwarming thing. I've done a lot of service work in my life because that's why I became an entertainer. I never had that thing of wanting to be a big star. I realized I had to have a record deal or I wouldn't be able to do what I do. I wouldn't be able to afford to do what I do without that. But that wasn't the motivation. My motivation has always been that music is a tremendous tool for healing people's hearts and their minds. And actually, Nashville wasn't a very good fit for me because of that. Nashville was, when I was there, was like they had what they called a song factory. And they just had these songs that were repetitious and, to me, somewhat meaningless.
Hmm.
I have to believe in what I'm singing. And it was always, and I never forget my first producer, Billy Sherrill, the famous Billy Sherrill, who was, you know, he discovered George Jones and Tammy Wynette and Charlie Rich. And he was Ray Charles' producer almost to the end of his life. And he did a lot of work with all of the greats. He just looked at me one day and he said, "You are the hardest person to find songs for I have ever worked with." And I said, "Do you think so?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "Because you have to believe what you're singing, and you have a mission." And he said, "It's going to be 100 times harder for you than it is for these other folks." He said, "Because you just won't settle for some." And I'll never forget, they always wanted me to sing songs about divorce. And I really hate songs about divorce. I don't even like divorce. You know, I think our hearts get so hard and we change, and sometimes it's absolutely necessary. But in those days, I just didn't want to sing about that. That's, you know, I'd rather sing about somebody being faithful. I'd rather sing about somebody being strong. I would rather sing something about, I don't want to sing, and I also was a very, very different, I didn't want to sing about being a victim. And some of us in that era, now I remember Roseanne Cash was the same way, and Gail Davies was the same way. There were a bunch of us who came into the music business with a little bit different English. We came in with a different thing that we wanted to do. And my whole thing has always been, I want to lift people up. I want to give people this. This is not an easy planet to live on. Don't ask me how I know this. This is not an easy plane of existence to be on. I don't know compared to what. But it isn't easy here. It's hard here on Earth. Some people don't have it hard, but most of us do. And people who don't have a lot of money might have it even harder, especially right now. I feel so much compassion for people who were just absolutely living paycheck to paycheck and couldn't even, if the transmission went out in their car, it was the end of the world. What are these people doing? I hope that our churches and service organizations are out there feeding people, and I know they are, and they need to be, because people need to know that this won't be forever, and people need to know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it is not an oncoming train. There is a lot, and I believe that people need to know, however they decide to believe in it, that there is some kind of a higher power. Whatever you want to call that, however you come to it, there must be a million roads to it. But that will sustain you. And if you've never tried it, if there are listeners out there who are hearing me right now, if you've never said, "I can't do this alone, you have to help me, Spirit. You have to help me, higher power. You have to help me, doorknob. I don't care what you call it." That is the only way that we can really pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, with the help of our higher power. And it's something that I sing about all the time. My new work, which is, I think you would probably call it Americana. Just one, I had a 13-year-old CD that in 2019 won the most prestigious award for musical excellence from Strictly Country Magazine and the Spirit Awards. Mm-hmm. And it my new single, Scarecrow, is this year nominated for Song of the Year. And that's a very unusual song. I don't know how that happened, but it's a trippy song. It's very real. But what I try to do, and what I've always wanted to do with music, and you know, because I have always had CDs like Hard Times, like Survivor. These were the messages that I was always trying to give to people. And I was also trying to show a side of myself that was not necessarily, how can I say it? Was a bit of an outlaw, an outlaw. I don't believe a lot of the things that people believe. I think I'm writing a song called The Devil by a Different Name. And one of the verses goes, "Call me imam, call me priest. We are brothers separated by belief." You know, A loveless face, a loveless face is a ball and chain. It's just the devil by a different name, boys. The devil by a different name, because I think we cannot judge each other's. How we believe in spirit is how we believe in any way that you come to that. Because it is all that is. It is all that is, and we forget that we are spiritual beings doing time in a physical, three-dimensional universe. We forget that. We need to be reminded. And we can't all be reminded by really... by a lot of dogma. You know, we got to be reminded by, I'll never forget on the back of one of Willie's Nelson's CDs, and I think it was the one we had I got a gold record for, from Columbia Records, for a half CD called Half Nelson. That was, I did a duet with Willie on there, and oh, there were amazing people on it. Ray Charles was on there, and Carlos Santana was on there, and it was, I mean, a lot of wonderful, I think Julio, it was amazing who all was on this CD, and it's been a long time. I can't even remember what year that was, but that went platinum. And on the back of, I believe it was that one, there was a picture on the back of this album of riders, cowboys on horses, and a cross on the top of a hill at sunset. And I'll never forget the quote. It was, "Outlaws still believe."
Amazing.
And that thread runs through the works of Kris Kristofferson, you know, with songs like "Why Me, Lord?" Mm-hmm. And a song that I recorded of his called "The Heart." You know, there's a deep spirituality, not confined to some, you know, corral, or a paddock or cage. Those walls are down, and that's what we need to do in this world. There is so much divisiveness in this world right now. There is so much polarity, you know, left and right. You know, the opposite of right is left. It's not wrong. These are concepts. We need to come together. There's a huge schism in the world now. It's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing. And it's between gay people and straight people. And it's between religious people and people of different beliefs. It's between political parties. It's between husbands and wives. We have got to learn to come together. We've got to learn somehow. And I think music is the great binder for people. It's a way for people to come together and enjoy. I mean, a lot of people love people like Willie Nelson and Kris Kristofferson and Johnny Cash. A lot of people with very differing views of the world. And they had very differing views of the world from each other. I traveled with Willie I've traveled with Cash and Kristofferson. I went to Europe and toured Europe with those guys and got to be around a lot of those people. Traveled with Merle Haggard for a year and a half with Hank Jr. Some of these people, very divisive people. People who, you know, had this one solid idea of how things are. We have to get over that stuff. I really do think, don't you, Rick, that true success is when we come from love. Every day we get up and we, at least, I mean, I'm not successful at it every day. You know, if I find out that the roof is caving in and the estimates are outrageous, I'm not so loving about things like that. You know, there are times when I can be, you know, an inveterate intolerant, but I do try. When I wake up in the morning, to remember that every being I come in contact with is animated by the spirit of all that is. How are we alive without that spirit? You know, I don't know how it can be done, and I think it can only be done through grace. And it can only be done if it's going to happen, if we're going to have peace, if we're going to come together, if we're going to If we're going to try to unite, it has to start right now with you and me, right here, one heart, one mind, one spirit at a time, going, this other is not so other.
Well, Lacey J., you got it. It starts with one-on-one conversations. Maybe it takes even a bit of gumption. You hear a friend talking divisively, and you got to remind them that, hey, that's stuff of the past, and you got to speak about unification of America.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
It would be.
Wouldn't that be wonderful? It doesn't happen very often, I've noticed. You know, we get together, and politically right now in this country, there is a schism a mile wide.
There sure
and
is.
In my new, in my song, The Devil by a Different Name, it goes, call me left wing, call me right. We're split right down the middle in this fight. Divided we fall. That rule don't change. It's just the devil by a different name, boys. The devil by a different name.
Well, that really says it all. Hey, Lacey, I want you to wrap up today's show. We've got a couple minutes left. Just if you could, in kind of a nice put a bow on the package style, tell America why they should hit their restart button and start over with a new attitude of optimism on how we can be different and better going down the road.
Well, I can't tell anybody how they should be, but wouldn't it be wonderful if we all woke up tomorrow and said, boy, this is a chance for a whole new world. This has never happened in our lifetime that the whole world is shut down. When we start it back up, wouldn't it be great if we could start it by waking up in the morning and saying, you know, I'm so lucky to be alive in this world. And I'm going to start my day with love. And I'm going to try to love everybody and everything that comes in. And whatever I can't handle, I need to hand over to all it is, to the, you know, higher power. Just hand it over. I can't deal with that. I'm just going to love this person. I'm going to try to love what I'm doing. I'm going to try to help those people who are so devastated in this. People with kids, you know, they may not be able to be thrown out of their apartments, but they may not have a place to get food. Well, donate or go down and work at a food bank or contribute your church. Do what we say we should do. You know what to do. We all know what to do. We just have to find the right way to do it and our way of doing it. And the one thing, Rick, that I've learned about service work, and I do a lot of service work for organizations like Rotary, for the Wild Horses, for the prisons, is that you can only do what you can do. Maybe you can only put a dollar in a jar for food. Well, if that's all you can do, that's enough. Don't push yourself, make yourself crazy and think you have to save the whole world. You just need to do your little bit, whatever that is, whatever you can afford to do with time, money, or energy. Just do that much. Just do that much. But do something. Mm-hmm. Don't do nothing.
Well, thank you, Lacey J. Dalton. And where can our listeners catch up with everything going on in your life?
Well, I'd love for you to come and visit the website, and it is LaceyJDalton.org. And there's no E in Lacey. It's just L-A-C-Y, letter J, D-A-L-T-O-N.org, and we'll be happy to hear from you.
Thanks again. That was Lacey J. Dalton. We love her new song lyrics, especially about the devil by a different name. We appreciate you all joining us on today's Success Made to Last Country Series, and we hope that you join us again. And we appreciate our sponsorship, especially from Graceful Years Greeting Cards, the home of those crazy church kitchen ladies. Until next time, we hope that you live the best version of you. Have a great week. Your faith, watching your spirits fall. Hard times as children too. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasini@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program. And thanks to our sponsor, Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards, and their hilarious Church Kitchen Lady cards. Church Kitchen Ladies are a bunch of maybe 20 million volunteers across the United States that work in 300,000 churches, and they say stuff like, mind your own biscuits and life will be gravy. They also say, crunch tacos, not abs. And psst, you're crazy is showing, you might want to tuck that back in. And one of our favorites is, life is short, lick the bowl. If you want to find out more about the wonderful Church Kitchen Ladies and join their roundtable, go to gracefully-yours.com today and find out about Church Kitchen Ladies and purchase all the rest of the fine Gracefully Yours greeting cards.